Galbiniak, editorial director at Promax, and this is the Daily Brief podcast. Today, I am honored to have with me Jonathan Park. He is founder of Alibi Music, and he's here to talk about how to best use music in entertainment marketing and other content. Hello, Jonathan. Thank you so much for joining.
Hi, Paige. Thank you so much for having me.
It's my pleasure. I've actually run a fair amount of stories about Alibi Music and music that you guys do, but to kick us off and to get everybody up to speed, just tell me about Alibi Music. What is it? What inspired you to found it?
Sure. Well, Alibi Music is a production music library and basically now a record label. Now that we release all our music commercially, we provide music to trailers, commercials, promos, in-show content, and basically anything that needs music. And it was founded just about 10 years ago. I was working as an EP a company called Beyond, where I was hired to start a music library from a Jingle House's catalog of dead demos. And I left Beyond to start Alibi, since Beyond has sold to BMG. And now we're Alibi.
And you guys are located in Los Angeles, but you've got, I know you have an office or at least a person in London.
Sure, we are basically located nowhere. I'm personally outside of Philadelphia in Pennsylvania. We have people in San Francisco, Portland, Los Angeles, and London, as well as people in Pennsylvania.
So when pandemic happened, you guys were sort of fine. You were already set up to work that way.
Yeah, we had our remote systems in place for the entire time the company has been in business. And of course, when adding more people throughout the years, that's when we really were forced to have everything set up so we could efficiently work remotely.
Yeah. And across time zones and all of that.
Yeah.
Well, sort of sticking with that question, did the pandemic really change anything for you guys, or was it sort of largely business as usual since you were already set up in that way?
I think it changed our mentality of life.
Yeah.
As with everyone else.
Yeah.
But other than, you know, the panic of the world, we were fortunate to get by pretty well and business as normal. We did slow down production a bit to make sure that things were going to be okay. And we were just very fortunate. We're kept busy with, we did do, you know, a lot of pandemic commercials, one of which was a Purcell commercial in London. And that song used in that commercial developed quite a fan base among the listeners. It was a right song for the right moment in time for the right message. So, you know, we were able to continue doing what we do. So we wanted to help in the ways that we could. So we offered our music to a company that was set up last year called The Art of Good, which was an agency, creative agency set up to basically create creative for independent businesses that were struggling and try to get them more business. And so we were able, you know, donate our music for that use. We were able to donate our music for companies of any sizes that were taking that time to work on their reel for gratis use. So, you know, we weren't able to mass produce masks or whatever else, but we did what we had to give.
Right. You did what you were equipped to do.
Yep.
Are you finding that, I mean, pandemic sort of changed this equation, but also accelerated it. Are you finding that the explosion of all the new platforms, and not just TV and movies, but on other platforms as well, social, gaming, et cetera, are creating more opportunity for production music? Because I feel like there's just more content, and more content needs more music.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's so much great content being put out everywhere by companies or people of any size. One of the cool things we're doing now is we just partnered with a company called All Star Games, which is taking our music and automating scoring to Twitch users. So the music changes with what happens in the game while they're live streaming. And it's pretty cool that they're able to do that, and that we have the structured music set up that they can do that with.
Did you guys create specific music for All-Star Games, or did they use existing music that you guys already had?
So a few years ago, Tim in Los Angeles met with Create Advertising, mm-hmm. and were talking with their VR department and what they were doing for VR promotions of films. And he worked with them, and they were talking about how they use music and the format that would really work if it existed for them to easily use music. So through that conversation and that meeting, Tim and Kent on our team that's based in San Francisco worked on developing our Game Loops catalog, which is structured for video game developers and an AR developer. And those work perfectly for a particular need.
Do you, if you were doing, this is a nitty gritty question. If you're doing, you know, music for Twitch and they're playing some game, League of Legends, and there's in-game music for League of Legends, does the music that All-Star Gaming does override that League of Legends music? Are you not allowed to use that music on a streaming platform? How does that work?
So I can't speak specifically for every game, but most likely their score is available. It's for the Twitch users who just want to have their own sound and want mm-hmm. to score what exactly they're doing.
Okay. Yeah. It's funny because it's a small world, because the podcast that I just released today was with Create Advertising, actually, about NFTs, which is very different than what we're talking about. But yeah.
I just listened to that. That was pretty fascinating. I still wrap my head around NFTs.
I know. I was just going to say, did you learn anything about NFTs?
I'm still pretty confused, honestly.
Yes, I also find it a little esoteric. All right, we will not digress into NFTs. So you guys, at least in my observation and writing about you, you release a lot of genre-focused music, and that I think it's sort of fun that you release this genre music and then it's suggested to go with certain kinds of content, so drama, mystery, comedy, action. And this is really... I think it's probably very obvious, but until I started to look at those, it didn't really occur to me that people were composing production music that was genre specific. When you are reaching out to composers and creating these different catalogs, sort of how do you determine what sorts of music, what sounds go with what genres? And do you find that people really use them for those genres, or do you find that they sort of go, great, thanks for the music, and then they do with it what they will?
So yeah, they basically, people will use it for what they will. The mood that it's set up for is the mood they'll use it for. But you know, our first when we launched, we had our first trailer placement a week after we launched, which is actually the fastest I've ever seen a trailer placement clear. And it was a piece of music that was developed for the purpose of being in a, you know, happy broadcast commercial. So the use of the music was very happy, but it was just used in the trailer instead. Then we had this thing where an epic trailer piece is used in a Dunkin' Donuts commercial, but it was a really cool epic Dunkin' Donuts commercial. So.
So yeah, so it's out there and you can suggest, but then they listen to it and sort of make decisions around what they want to use.
And the mood fits whatever they're doing. It's just not very project specific as far as what we release for.
Right. So for you guys, when working with clients, I mean, I don't know how much you work with them in terms of their music selection, but for you, what are the elements that make a good piece of production music that's used in promotion?
Sure. We are very strict on structure with Alibi, to have very clear intros that are sparser and build throughout, edit points that can be used and or not used and just cut around to make. And then we have alt ending, so there's different options for the editor of how they want to end the track. Mm-hmm. So we structure the track to be very versatile. It can just be used as a groove, but most content requires some kind of build or some kind of mountain or valley to tell the story with.
So you're very aware of the storytelling use of this music and its structure accordingly.
Yeah, absolutely. And I personally think any good music is structured. Oh, there's a lot that maybe doesn't fall in that category. Music I really enjoy, definitely, it's not the same thing over and over for 2 minutes.
So this maybe is a, this will be a hard question to answer because it'll be about picking amongst your favorite children, but do you have genres that you prefer?
Personally, no. I'm a fan and collector, obsessive collector that I turned from a hobby into my world profession. But no, I love all styles of music.
So you, in terms of your the structure of your business, you have obviously people that work for Alibi, but you also contact composers, correct?
Yes.
So how do you go about identifying those people and knowing that they would be appropriate for this kind of work?
We don't do that much outreach to composers. It's more inbound. We get well over 1,000 submissions a year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I would say most are decent, but at the end of that, we maybe will work with 5 that we feel are up to the standards that we've gotten to within the company.
Mm-hmm. So how many composers would you say that you guys work with overall?
At the moment, we've had about 250 contributors. And that's intentionally trying to keep the composer pool small. Mm-hmm. It's still a lot, but we intentionally try to work with the composers that are versatile and work well together. And, with new composers, even if they've produced for other catalogs, the way we specifically structure our tracks is fairly unique. It's what editors and producers really like about Alibi, but it seems pretty specific. So there's a learning curve when we bring on new people.
When you say it's what they specifically like about Alibi, you mean they have these choices of all sorts of different sounds to choose from. It's not necessarily sort of a similar sound over and over again.
Yeah, and within the tracks and how they're structured, they're structured to be used to tell a story and right. have, with the edit points and builds and everything.
Mm-hmm. One thing that was mentioned in some of the pre-research that I did for this was talking about stems. And I was like, I don't even know what a stem is. So what are stems in your music and how are they used in promos?
Sure. So stems are basically, they're just all the individual instruments as their own tracks, which allows the editors to mix and match how they need to go along with what they're cutting. Along with the stems, we also offer alt versions in drum and bass, a sparse mix, which we define as the no drums mix, and we don't call it the no drums mix because if you put drums in the title, then if you're searching for drums, then you're going to get a bunch of no drums mixes, even though you're looking for drums. So that's just tagging is a pet peeve of mine when I see other people or companies that say, this isn't a saxophone mix. It's like, well, if you're looking for saxophone, that's going to come up.
Actually, let's talk about that, because didn't Alibi, you guys recently redid your website and launched this whole sort of fancy search engine capability, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So talk about that a little bit in light of what you were just saying about tagging.
Sure. So one album of about 13 tracks can have 400 audio files, each of the stems and the alt mixes. So we're finding our own system which can handle searching those correctly and easily. Every single mix we have, if it's a bass and drum mix or a sparse mix or a stem, it has its own unique searchable data because we find that those are as useful as the main mixes for many reasons, and we see them get used as on their own as much as the main mixes. So and then we have the 30s and the 15s and the 5s that are searchable, which are the cut downs for just throwing in an edit and not having to edit the track so much. So we're able to develop the system where everything is in its right place and searchable, but isn't a nightmare. And we worked with a company called Magnetic Creative, who developed the system for us and rebranded the company to more accurately reflect what we've become over the last 10 years. So it's been really exciting and it's a powerful tool. I think there's definitely a learning curve there as we have features that I have not seen on any other systems. Some favorites are the tap tempo. So you can, if you are working with a reference track or you just want to set the, you know, the general tempo, what feels like for your cut, you can click the tap tempo and that will set the BPM to a range within that tempo to sort by and filter by. It's whenever I'm searching for anything, that's usually the first thing I'll go to, is just, you narrow down the tempo, you're going to get there a lot quicker. It's really cool. And I don't think I've ever seen a site where it has a clear exclude field in a search bar, which after finding music for clients for the last 15 years, you know, even there's so many words to tag music with that are correct, but also if you're looking for something happy acoustic and you get a bunch of jazz in the 1960s and that's not what you need at that particular moment, you just start excluding those and it really narrows down the search to what the vibe you want without knowing exactly how to get there.
Right. What kind of feedback have you gotten from your clients in terms of using the search engine? Have they found that it's making their lives easier?
Yeah, we've gotten really great feedback. And it feels really good to be able to provide what we were hoping to provide and making it work. It's a very complicated thing to set up, but from some trailer supervisors and other people in the industry who have, especially over the last, since we launched it at the end of last year, the feedback has been it's made their working from home life a lot easier. And I'm just happy we could provide what the best thing we can for those we work with.
Do you find that this is probably a newbie thing? People come in and they want to use, you know, like the popular song of the day and kind of quickly realize that for copyright reasons they cannot. So then they turn to production music. Or do you feel like people at this point know that they need to license music? And so they're not necessarily as focused on something very familiar unless they have a very specific project and in mind with an adequate budget.
Yeah, I think everyone, well, you know, the people I work with are
right.
And very intelligent, creative people. And if they're working on the project we work on, they're going to have that knowledge for them, hopefully.
Right. Right. Do you guys do much bespoke music, meaning someone comes to you with a project they're working on that you compose specifically for?
We do. We absolutely do. And we also are able to alter existing music. Since we do have a close relationship with all the composers we work on, I'm pretty amazed at how well the composers keep their sessions. You know, they're able to dig up sessions from 10 years ago to remix a track. I'm like, that's kind of mind blowing to me.
Yeah. 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 And it's interesting too, because I feel like your composers, you know, they do several things. So they do production music, but they also, maybe some of them are in a band, or they, you know, they tour, or they do, or they're, you know, studio musicians, they have other things going on. So I think they have access to lots of different types of sounds and types of genre. I think it's just, you don't necessarily think about people that compose production music. That's not the only thing they do. You know, they have a broad spectrum of things they do. And I think it's good that they have the opportunity, you know, to, from an income point of view, if you're not necessarily, sometimes being a musician, it doesn't pay all your bills, right? So it's helpful to have some other ways to do that.
Yeah. And, you know, we Certainly all of our composers work in other ways as well, different aspects, but we are very happy that, you know, just from Alibi, a fair amount are making a livable income just from working, making library music, which is great.
Yeah. So you mentioned The Art of Good and you mentioned All-Star Games. Are there any other cool projects like that that you guys are working on right now?
Well, we definitely have more partnerships with technology companies that we're in talks with, which there's a lot of companies that are making tools for content creators at different levels. So it's great mm-hmm. to be working with them. And because everyone needs music. So it's a good place to be. And they're doing really cool things and hopefully be able to announce some of those pretty soon.
Okay, I'll keep an eye out for those.
In life, and what we do is we don't really know what we're working on a lot of the time.
Yeah, because people are licensing the music and then going off.
Yeah, and you know, we have especially with the networks and promos, and we're set up where they in various ways, whether it be approved vendor or blanket license, and they just use the music, and especially if it's under a blanket license, they generally don't tell us about it.
Right. They just pull as they need.
My favorite recent project, and we only know about it because the composer on it spotted his own music. But most recent favorite project of mine is the Resident Evil Infinite Darkness trailer. As I'm a huge Resident Evil fan and have been since it launched in '96. So that's my new favorite personal project.
Yeah, that's like life goal. Are you often, you know, just watching TV or doing something and go, oh, that's our music?
Sometimes mm-hmm. the catalog is so big and there are so many mixes of the music.
Yeah.
I don't recognize it most of the time.
Uh-huh. Yeah, somebody's usually pointed out to you maybe. Yeah.
I'm Shazamming trailers to find out if it's ours. I'm like, that sounds familiar.
It's funny. So you guys have been in business 10 years, as you said. I feel like this is an impossible question, but I'll ask you, which is when you sort of look out 10 years, what is there anything that you see in terms of trends or directions that you're heading?
Well, definitely looking for to work with more partners in different aspects. There's so many people doing so many interesting things and developing interesting pools for content creators to make it simpler. So we love working with technology companies. We have a lot of technology on our to-do list that we're implementing slowly but surely. It takes quite the development time. But other than that, just you know, we work with quite a few networks, but there's a few we don't work with yet. So mm-hmm. still trying to rattle those trees. Mm-hmm. But other than that, continue doing what we're doing and listening to our clientele and listening to whatever's out there and how we can be the best resource we can be to create what's needed for the people we work with.
Okay. I think that will do it for today. Thank you so much for your time, Jonathan. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you so much, Paige. Really nice talking with you.
Nice talking with you, too, and have a wonderful day. Bye.
You too. Take care.
That's it for this episode of the Daily Brief podcast. Thank you to David Tylov for editing this episode. Please subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on Apple Podcasts, where you can also rate and review us, or you can subscribe on Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow Promax on @Promax_Global on Twitter and Instagram, and @Promax Global on Facebook and LinkedIn. You can also go old school and email us at dailybrief@promax.org. And as always, thanks for listening.